Alright, so we're going to start this thing?
Yeah.
Just me, you and I today. Just the two of us, no guests.
Yes. Well, you know, I thought we should get back to basics after the experiment of the last one.
Well, you know, we get all stifled and complicated when there's people around. We feel like we can't drink too much and we have to...
be on our best behaviour.
Yeah, behave ourselves. And I mean, for instance, it's quite nice that it's just the two of us. We can actually do the podcast in the nude again, like we did originally.
Yeah. It's good to feel the air on your skin.
I mean, I quite like the breeze wafting around the privates. It's nice. And I hadn't really noticed how much I missed it until today.
Well, you know, the lard makes a difference too.
Well, yeah. I'm glad you warmed it up there first.
Yeah, well, you know, it's warm today, but it's still technically
winter. It takes
a
long time to rub a block of lard all over your body.
Yeah, and you don't want it straight from the fridge.
That's when you get chafing.
Yeah. And it puts you out of the mood for podcasting.
It does, yeah. Well, I've heard goose grease is good.
Alarming tendency to be serious, which I'm hoping you'll be able to rein in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do my best to take the piss out of you as much as I can.
That's what I'm here for. last episode was the first one you edited, and I thought you did a smashing job. I walked out of Shed Studio a couple of weeks ago thinking, my God, that's never going to amount to anything. But, I had the curious privilege of hearing it first time round on my little MP3 player as I went for a walk, and I thought, my God, this is making sense. How is this possible?
I'm glad you liked it. I feel like I was a bit slack with it. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out Audacity and make it work, and then at some stage just chucking a whole lot away and starting again, but... it was interesting. It made me realise how useful it would be to have two microphones so that you can actually, technical stuff, you know, you can separate out the streams and I could sort of see the difficulties of editing audio. Yeah. I enjoyed editing it. I'll do that again sometime. Give you a break, you know, get sick of it.
We'll see if I can get this done before the end of the year, and maybe the next one will be your turn again to...
Well, maybe my next one will come out
before this one.
Yeah. Well, I won't be here by the time this comes out, probably.
No, you're going overseas.
Yeah.
Back to the mother country.
I'll be back in the motherland, yep. Me mother and DrupalCon in London, which I'm looking forward to. I'm very excited. I mean, you may have guessed that already because I've been banging on about it for months now, but... although I'm getting less excited the more my itinerary grows. It's getting so complicated. But a bit nervous about the whole thing, but...
You have too many friends. That's that's a trap I've cunningly managed to avoid falling into over the last 40 years.
I have this cursed English politeness thing, which, you know... I don't know, I need to develop that jellyfish kindness, you know, the sort which stings. Where people think you're being kind, but actually you need to insult them whilst you're doing it. And then you actually get out of the conversation with them, going, oh, what a lovely man. And then as they walk away from you, they go, that fucking prick. That was two meanings to that thing. But I'm A, not intelligent enough to work that out, and B, I feel a bit bad about doing that kind of thing.
I think you're assuming that people do... that all the people who do that consciously. I offend people all the time. No effort required whatsoever.
No, there's a difference though, because they'd go, bloody Matthew insulted me and he didn't even realise the prick. But then there's the ones who go, oh, what a lovely person. And they walk away and go, actually, no, they didn't mean it like that. They meant it like this. and that's true evility, and I quite admire that. I wish I could do that, because then I'd have a more relaxing time in England when I went there. But you know, I've got a lot of great friends over there, so I'm looking forward to seeing them. God, I feel like I'm standing on stage. It's just me and you across the table, and I feel like I'm. It's all this bloody lard rubbed all over me. It's putting me off.
We've got to get a move on, because it does start to smell after the first hour or so. So
that's true, and it's sticking to the seat. It's the vinyl seat and the lard.
Yeah, it's okay. The cats will be along to clean that up.
So. Well, one of them's down there licking me right now. It's a bit sandpapery.
What didn't we mention in the last podcast? It
the lard.
Well, we didn't have it then. We were out of doors. We would have attracted the flies.
I was actually smeared with lard, but I was wearing my clothes just for, you know, society.
Oh, okay.
Well, we were talking about films and stuff.
Mm. It occurred to me today. We were sitting there talking about films with Dave Fokes, one of Sortie Wood's most acclaimed film directors.
Not the most acclaimed film director of Sortie Wood. And Finland. Maybe not Finland.
No, I don't think he's big in Finland yet. But it occurred to me, we neglected to mention that his latest short film had just won the Best Coffs Coast Film Award at the Short Sharp Film Festival.
It's very unusual for us to neglect to mention anything, really, isn't it?
We usually get around to everything, more or less, and then we have to edit out 99% of everything, and that's how we get an episode.
Yes.
We just start with everything and whittle it down.
That's why it takes so long.
Yeah.
I think at 10 o'clock tonight, when we finish talking, being in the middle of the day now, we'll probably realise that that's the case with this podcast. So I'm going to have to drink this beer faster, I think.
Cheers.
Cheers.
But yeah, Dave from... Dark Labs Films. Dark Labs' difficult second film won the Best Coffs Coast Film. His rather less difficult first film won a couple of awards. No?
Can you actually, if someone's listened to this podcast and they want to see one of those films that Dave has done, is there a way they can get it? I mean,
I do believe he's put them all up on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yep. So I'll post some links to those in the show notes, so you don't have to go searching for his two films called Keep It In The Family and The Boy Next Door, which are sufficiently vague titles that you won't be able to Google them anyway.
Which I've noticed, actually, so far you've failed to mention, are both starring yourself.
Gosh, I've almost forgotten.
He's tried to scrub it from your memory. So if you'd like to see Matthew starring David Fox's two fantastic movies, go to our affiliate links.
Yes.
At makemoney.com/...
YouTube gives us 1% of a Bitcoin for every visitor.
Oh, bullshit.
But I think we as the Sawtell Neckbeards Incorporated.
Here's a thing we can talk about.
Having an effect on Dave, because I did look at his... I did check out his website the other day, and I noticed that at the bottom there's a little Creative Commons attribution license logo at the bottom of the every page. I don't know if that...
More than I've got.
Yeah. I'm just too slack to explicitly say it.
I'm too slack to actually chase up copyright, even if someone did infringe my copyright.
But
please,
go
ahead and sample my voice right now as I'm speaking and take the piss out of me
and
make money from it. I don't care.
Yeah, and as is generally the problem when you see that logo at the bottom of a web page, you don't know whether it applies to the website itself or to the videos on YouTube that he's linking
or even
to,
just to the,
or embedded
link
in
itself.
The page. Yeah, so I'm going to have to chase him up and find out exactly what his intentions are there. But it does show that we are corrupting him. We are having an effect. He's probably going to start growing a neck beard any day now.
Well, I haven't started growing a neck beard.
No.
I have got a hairy neck, actually, but that's another story.
That's a reversed neck beard.
That's caused by the lard.
Yeah. Well, the lard keeps it down.
Hmm. And you can style it into amusing shapes.
Yeah.
Sort of topiary. I have this Android app on my phone, which just downloads podcasts and then randomly plays them as they arrive. And I never quite know whether I'm listening to the latest version or not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I suppose if that was the case, maybe at the beginning of our podcast, as an example, we should actually say, today's date is... I don't know.
Yeah, next thing you know, we'd be saying who we are and what we're doing.
I
think it's best to leave people guessing.
The problem is, even if I did say that, I wouldn't actually know what... Like just in that example just then, I had no idea what that... I still don't know what day it is. The closest I get to actually following the time is that when our chickens lay an egg, I'm supposed to write the date on the egg. And I've actually found in the fridge before I've opened it up, and I was a bit drunk when I'd picked up the eggs, you know, in the evening when I come home. I thought, oh, no one checked the chickens today. So I go to get the eggs and I put them in the thing and I go, what's the date? And I've just written today. And then I realised the next day that that's no good because it says today. But I thought I was a bit of a wag, you know.
Speaking of George Orwell, he was doing that as well.
I did follow the George Orwell blog. Yes,
yeah, do you recall a couple of years ago? Yeah.
He was almost as obsessed as I was about chicken eggs.
Yeah.
You have to have chickens to realise it's a perfectly valid obsession.
So, as we established quite a few episodes ago, I'm behind the curve when it comes to... and behind the curve.
Well, you were waiting for a long time for that rooster to lay an egg, weren't you?
I mean, yes. It didn't
roosters
quite work
don't
out.
Lay eggs, Matthew.
It doesn't matter how much encouragement you give them.
No.
Coaching.
They might poop on you, but they don't lay an egg.
Yeah. All those wasted afternoons.
Sitting beside it, trying to encourage... George Orwell, yes. No, he's a fabulous bloke. I'm looking... If anyone out there wants to send me a copy... before Christmas, of George Orwell's, not Bengal, Burma. George Orwell's Burma Days, I think it's called.
I won't spoil yet another podcast with the sound of tapping on the keyboard.
Yeah, stay away from the keyboard. It's the only time in your life you actually don't touch the computer when you actually got the microphone out. Yeah, my wife's going off to Burma in January, and she's after a copy of George Orwell's book about his time in Burma. So, which could be interesting, you know, because it's going to be about that historical period.
He got about a bit for a guy who died quite young.
He did, didn't he? I mean, he roughed it too, you know. He did the kind of
may explain why he died so young.
He did the feral backpacker thing, you know, because he was down and out in London and Paris, which is the book I was mentioning earlier to you, where he was penniless and working as a plongeur in Parisian restaurants, and you know, see if you can guess by the name plongeur what that might involve.
A lot of business to do with plumbing.
Yes, he was down in the cellar of the poshest, fanciest restaurants cleaning the dishes.
Excellent.
Which meant he was up to his armpits in plumbing the whole time with these filthy dishes, and the waiters would come in after, you know, talking to a particularly obnoxious guest and cough up a particularly nasty bit of phlegm to spit on their meal before they took it out, and the guests would then send their compliments back to the chef and what a delightful bit of cream that was on top of their meal. George Orwell really has put me off restaurants. Burma, I think that could be interesting. His Burmese book. Yeah, so she's actually going to go there with some Burmese monks, and I probably shouldn't talk too much about it in case the Burmese regime listens in and decides to arrest her or something. Do they listen to this podcast? Anyone from the Burmese regime listening?
I haven't got any dents from anybody in Burma about it. I don't know if it would spoil the purity of the enterprise if we were to sort of advertise an email address or something where people could respond.
What, you mean to actually have people have listeners' emails?
Oh, well, not necessarily have a mailbag section on the show.
I love that idea. That's hilarious.
Although we did receive one from a Mrs. Trellis in North Wales.
At first, I noticed from the enormous piles of mail that the lads in the post room have been reenacting the Battle of Agincourt again. And that we've received this postcard from a Mrs. Trellis of North Wales. She writes, Dear Lewis, So sorry you missed out on the Formula One World Championship. First your old pal Morse dies, now this. Yours, etc., Mrs. Trellis. Stupid old bat.
Does anyone use email anymore?
I don't. Well, that would be the flaw in the whole process, because you only get bad news via email these days, so I try not to read it.
That's part of the confusion. I mean, what do you do for get back to us? I think you kind of bank on the fact that people who are savvy enough to actually subscribe to a podcast are probably savvy enough to actually figure that shit out themselves, and they can send you a dent or a Twitter or a Dent Twit Plus. Must be a name for it.
Well, it's irrelevant anyway. Google will
What is the sound an exploding pustule makes? Had too much Bill Reed, Matthew, sorry.
Yes, that looks like a rather nasty build-up of Google Plus you've got there. We'll have to get that lanced.
Yeah,
it's irrelevant. Google will quietly kill Google Plus when it's done its job.
You could say, if you'd like to send us a message, we can pass you a hanky.
I don't know if anybody's... Well, no, I do know nobody's interested in my opinion, but
I'm interested. Why I'm here. I'm actually your psychotherapist.
Yes,
is that right? Psychotherapist? Sorry, physio? Okay, brain.
Yep. Yeah, you're not my physiotherapist, despite the lard. But yeah, I'm prepared to make the bold prediction that Google Plus will, in about 12 months' time, take its place alongside Google Wave in the Apache incubator, /dev/null.
I just want to record that little segment that you just said.
That is my bold prediction.
You save that little soundbite, name that. Because if they turn out to be the next big thing...
I'm putting this up alongside my bold prediction that Apple will be the number one free software company in the world.
You're a free-tard neckbeard who doesn't use these things. How would you know? I mean, came by this morning and you caught me, red-handed in the act of being a filthy, closed-minded, closed-source...
Twitter user.
Twitter and... What's it called again? Sorry, pustule exploding. Google Plus-tard.
Yes.
I'm a Google Plus-tard. Sorry, slow down, Ruben. Google Plus user and Twitter user. And there I was sitting there using... and I was actually... wasn't finding it exemplary or wildly exciting, but at the same time, I was trying to use it in a... How does this feel? Is it any good? And this is going to be dated by the time you edit this post and get it out, but...
Yeah. It will have died by the time you finish this post.
Let's make a bet right now. We're going to put our names on the line, okay? So you think it'll be actually, you're editing the post. This is not a fair bet.
Well, I reckon Google Plus will go the way of Google Wave within about a year.
A year,
yeah.
That's quite a long way. If it lasts a year, I think it's survived.
Yeah, the reason for Google doing Google Plus is that it feels threatened by social networking. Because for years I've been saying I'm worried about Google because it's the web's single point of failure. Because within about a year, Google became so essential to me that if it went away, I just couldn't use the web anymore. But it's increasingly the case that I hardly use Google at all. Mm. If I want to know something general about a particular topic, I go straight to Wikipedia. If I want to serendipitously stumble across something that I might find entertaining, I go to Identica or whatever.
But you're not normal, Matthew.
Well,
no, you're not.
I'm normal-ish.
Have you ever sat with a user and said to them, okay, just go to the website? And they go to Google and start typing in www.blah.com. And they Google their domain name.
I have had that very
experience.
And then
they go, and then if they've had their website built by certain web development companies, of a local origin, I wouldn't like to name Giant. then they don't find it. They type in their domain name and it's not in Google. And so you have to actually say, no, use the address bar. I am using the address bar. No, you're using the Google search box. Use the address. Look, this thing, and you have to point physically, and they go, oh, don't touch my screen, it's $3,000. And it, Google is it might not be necessary for you, but I think a lot of people still use, and actually a lot of people are using Bing and going, I can't find anything.
But anyway. You got a fresh coat of lard on?
Yeah, thanks.
It's looking nice and shiny.
Thank you. Yeah, you missed a bit of cat hair.
You missed a bit.
Where?
Oh, just other side.
Hang on.
That's better.
Yeah, lovely. next time we should have some geese, I think. What were we talking about, apart from the lard and the geese grease?
We were talking about something. No, it's gone. Damn.
I wasn't actually trying to think of what we were talking about. I was just thinking how amusing it was that we'd forgotten what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking to Alison about bicycles and WD-40, actually.
Yeah.
Right, that put me off. I was getting excited about the two-wheeled beast. It's interesting, though. I mean, just people might listen to this right now and think, well, you know, that's all very well and interesting, but it's rather mundane. But in 100 years' time, or actually even in 50 years' time, people will listen to this and go, oh my God, this is fascinating. Who would have thought the Sortelican Valley would have begun with such small beginnings of just, you know, a guy pedaling around covered in lard on a bicycle? And now it's this great empire.
Yeah,
that's controlling the known world. After, you know, this is after the United States has fallen, and I mean they've been having riots in Tottenham, I hear, in London. So I'm expecting the Drupal conference to actually will herald the end. You know, the geeks will riot about some new module change. It'll be like the assassination of that Archduke, you know.
Yes, the Git commit heard round the world. Yeah.
Before you knew it, the world was on fire and Australia, you know, was rising up and so Silicon Valley was the new, you know, technical centre to the...
I did want to talk about Sortelican Valley, but it did occur to me the other day that it's rather odd, and thank heavens that after the chaos of the 1970s, the strikes, the economic disasters, when Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan came in and saved the world with...
Thank God for Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah, because it's hard to believe that a mere 30 years ago, there were economic crises, there were strikes, there were revolutions. The world was just, you know... going to hell in a handbasket.
Well, I heard the
thanks to economic rationalism, it was all fixed, and that will never happen again. So, end sarcasm.
Nerd. I was chatting to my mum on the phone last night, and she was telling me that she'd been watching the news, and they were having conniption fits because the FTSE index was the lowest it's been in 2 years. Who gives a shit? I mean, 2 years. I mean, we've been complaining about this. We haven't, sorry. They've been complaining about their recession. When I say they, I'm referring to the rest of the world. Here we are in cocky, upmarket Australia where we're drinking the old vino and stout. Living it up with expensive microphones and nuts and lard, whilst the rest of the world burns.
Yes.
Just pass me the fiddle. No, don't actually. That's a bad idea. But you get them.
You don't want to get lard on your fiddle.
That's true. Well, it would sound funny.
Mm.
So I forget the point of my whole, the thrust of my whole argument there. I'd need more lard on that one to get me going, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, from my point of view, there's a fair amount of schadenfreude because
Of what, sorry?
Schadenfreude. Oh.
That's an Australian word, isn't it?
It is. It comes from the Barossa Valley.
Hang on. Oh, I can taste it.
Yeah.
Carry on.
So, schadenfreude.
I'm sorry, every time you're talking, I keep looking out the window behind you and seeing these hot babes walk past.
As I said, spring
is... It's distracting. I mean, that walking frame really adds to her athletic figure.
Oh, she's a hottie.
She's a bicycle girl.
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
But
sorry.
I know who you're talking about, and poor. No, you've thrown me now.
Barossa Valley, Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude. Whenever there's a hint of economic catastrophe in the offing, I always think, well, you know, my $0 bank balance is now still worth $0. Everybody else is worse off. Relatively speaking, I've become wealthier. Happy days are here again. I was jolly impressed with your recounting of Roy's response. Roy, our mutual friend from Hotnet. In Sawtell.
Yep.
When the estate agent came over and said, we're putting your rent up by about 65%. He said, apparently. I don't want to pay that.
Yeah.
And
I was impressed too.
I had no idea you could do that.
Of course you can.
That's fantastic. I
say that, but of course, if I'd been in that position, I would have gone, oh, really? Oh, okay, then.
Yes.
And Roy just said, no, we're not. And that's just silly.
And I thought, my God, I'd never noticed the wheelbarrow he pushes in front of him to carry his testicles everywhere.
Because they are a mighty fine pair of testicles. Yeah. Well, I've never seen them, but obviously they're pretty mighty because he just wheeled them out and said, I'm not paying that. You're my landlord. Get fucked.
That's fantastic. That's magnificent. Hmm. And my respect for him has gone up considerably, I've got to say.
I'm glad you said that because I'd kind of taken that on board and thought, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me that thinks that's pretty good and everyone else knows this already.
No.
Well, I'm glad you know that too.
And I pride myself on being pretty darn bolshy, but...
Obviously, you're not bullshy enough.
I'm not. And you know, this returning to the theme of Sawtell, which is the theme of our podcast.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
We live in Sawtell, people.
I have been suffering for the last couple of months the absence of the video/book/lolly shop that we had for... I don't know, maybe 6 months.
I cannot find licorice for love or money.
No.
God. If anyone out there would like me to perform dubious acts for them, for licorice, please contact us on...
Well, you know how. If you
yeah,
know,
you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, just send us some message somehow. Yeah.
But, yeah, I was heartbroken when the... video/books/lolly shop/internet cafe/whatever else it was had to close down, and I went in to stock up on aniseed balls before they closed the doors. That's... And I asked the proprietress.
You can't say proprietress, that's sexist.
Well, the thing is that there's...
She's a proprietor.
But she was the co-proprietor with her husband. How do you make this distinction between herself and her? Well, actually, it could have been a same-sex couple. You're entirely right.
Yeah, exactly. My God, I'm so clever.
Yes. So, I asked the co-proprietor what had, you know, prompted the closure of the business, and she just said the rent was too high. And
well, thank God the shop's empty now.
Yes. that for lease sign is really satisfying a lot of my needs. That had hitherto gone unsatisfied.
Yeah, me too, actually. I quite often find myself dry-humping that lease sign at night times.
It's great.
No one but the cameras
Yeah. And when you're not using it, families gather around it and just look,
come,
children, look at the for lease sign.
I hope they wipe it down with tissue first.
Yes.
Sawtelle, where we live, in the 70s, it was always this run-down, crappy area where all the sort of shonky people... No, shut up. So Sawtelle's this place where all these shonky people come from, and in Coffs Harbour, they always said the rednecks come from Sawtelle. That's what I've heard. In Cornwall, we've got Camborne and Redruth, and Camborne was Rednecksville. So Sawtelle was like where the rednecks came from. Then time went on, and these hippies and then eventually city folk came up and said, wow, you know, Angarry's nice, and that Sawtelle place is nice. And Sawtelle became this kind of trendy kind of beach town where suddenly it was a desirable place to live. And the people living here are suddenly, you know, it's not a Rednecksville anymore. It becomes desirable. And then when I moved here 6 years ago, the house prices doubled within 6 months, and suddenly it's this great place to live, and nothing's really changed apart from this idea in people's head, which has been reflected in the house prices, which are this thing that, you know, John Howard has pushed, which he's bought on from Maggie Thatcher years ago. You know, I mean, this is back in England. I mean, a worldwide phenomenon, and Reagan too.
Keep the house prices artificially inflated, and nothing wrong can happen.
Yeah, because people are suddenly, I'm so rich, I can borrow against my home.
Yeah.
So people are suddenly spending, and now we're in this situation where the United States is just almost defaulted on multi-trillion dollar loans and has just kicked the ball along the yard a bit more to who knows. England's suffering from riots, and you know, there's fires and people chucking petrol bombs at police stations, and
London's burning.
Yay!
At least we're going to get some good music out of it. That's what I think.
I hope so. Yeah. God, get rid of bloody the shit that they're playing at the moment. So what would I know?
We should one day get Pam Warland from the Sawtelle Historical Society along for an interview, because Sawtelle is a bit weird because it's always been a very an artificial village. My understanding of it is basically this guy whose name, I kid you not, was Aussie Sawtelle.
Aussie!
he basically owned the whole place, and he was stroking his beard one day, as one did in the early 20th century, and thought, what can I do with this huge expanse of sand dune and swamp that I own? And he thought, I know, those people who are camping by the beach, I'll make this a holiday destination. And that's literally what he did. He drew up the street plan, and he created what he said was going to be the Manly of the North. And this coincided with popular uptake of the motor car, which suddenly meant that people in Sydney, instead of going on their holidays to Manly, another suburb in Sydney, could manage to go on holidays, you know, some distance up the coast. So in a way, where Sawtelle is struggling with the fact that it's always been a fake manufactured place, but you know, there's still something nice about fake manufactured places. Like I've been to Thailand twice, and I kind of feel guilty about it because I'm going to Phuket or Pattaya or Koh Samui or whatever, and the places only exist as tourist destinations. And there's all these poor sods who, you know, serving you beers and running around after you in this totally artificial environment. If you go into any real town or city in Thailand, they don't have bars or pubs or anything like that. And it's actually kind of just frighteningly foreign. but there are nice sort of fake places, and there are nasty sort of fake places. And this sounds like me being a white
hand. The ones that have tricked you just enough.
This sounds like me being a dreadful white Anglo-Saxon quibbler.
It's the lard. It reveals all.
But I actually like places like Patong in Phuket, because it's a fake place, but it's been a fake place for so long that it's become a real fake place.
Is it a fake place for the people who work there? I mean,
But
to them, they work there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not fake to them.
And that's what makes it real. And that's what I enjoy about it.
I guess by the fact it's a fake place, it's fake because it's not what you think it is, or what you know they want you to think it's this kind of a place, and you know it's not, but you're choosing. A bit like watching a Walt Disney movie, you know you're supposed to cry at that scene, but you don't. Or you do, because you know you're supposed to, but you hate the fact. And I guess that's the thing about some films. You watch a film and you watch it and you know that you're being manipulated to feel happy or laugh or cry at these different scenes. And it's the same when you go to these places and you know you're being manipulated, because you go to this bar and it's supposed to be representing something which makes you feel a certain way. And you kind of, if it's too transparent, you don't like it. It makes you feel cross, because you think, well, hang on, you're just manipulating me now. Whereas if they did it well, then you wouldn't feel manipulated. You go, oh, it's genuine. So what it is that they haven't perfected it yet. Give them another 10, 20 years, and tourists will go and they're going, God, it's been there for hundreds of years, and it's fantastic. It's so real. It's, you know, people will just get sucked in by it because they'll get really good at it. You're just lucky enough to be there when they haven't perfected it, and you can see through it. You know, this is Cory Doctorow and how he talks about Walt Disney all the time. I mean, I suppose that's how Walt Disney's, at least Walt Disney, I suppose, in its evilness is completely open, because they're saying, well, actually, Walt Disney World's fake, and we're not pretending it's not fake. Whereas, you know, Phuket is fake, and they're pretending it's not fake.
I suppose what I would like Sawtelle to be is a place that's that mixture between, yes, we know that a certain amount of our economy depends on tourist trade, but a certain amount of the tourist trade depends on the tourists feeling like this is a real place where real people live, and while I'm here as a visitor, I'm a guest of a community that genuinely exists and welcomes me as a visitor. And that's kind of the thing.
Are you trying to say that we're a community that actually exists?
Well,
or are we debating? Stranger
things have happened. I think it's possible that we can have, you know, it doesn't have to be Sawtelle. It could be any place. Like, I was in Sydney late last year for the 40th birthday of a friend of mine, and we stayed in a hotel in Blacktown, which is not a tourist destination for those people who are unfamiliar with Western Sydney.
That's me.
And it's you know, just a bit of a dive. It's the inner outer western suburbs.
That means nothing to me. And it's a bit of a dive anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've got the big sort of multi-story shopping centre built up, which obviously instantly killed street life.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, street life has sprung up again with the Vietnamese and Lebanese communities and all sorts of things. And so the people who like the shopping malls, they can go to the shopping mall. But I had a fantastic time for a couple of days just wandering around and eating all this food and enjoying the vibrant street life and the pubs. And just wandering around and exploring and having a great time in Blacktown, which is like, I'm struggling to think of a London equivalent.
Well, that interesting you saying this though, because I might have an equivalent, because my brother-in-law got married recently in Brisbane, so I went up to Brisbane just for the day. I mean, you know, I told you about it, and I drove up for a day. You know, it's what a 5-hour drive. So I left first thing in the morning, drove up there, got there 2 hours early, so I just wandered around Brisbane. And I was kind of blown away because last time I lived in Brisbane for 9 years, and I've been down here now for 6 years. And going back to Brisbane again felt like I'd gone back to the Big Smoke. You know, it felt so exuberant and so full of life. And there was all these, like, there was Asians and, you know, people of every colour. Or well, maybe not every colour because it's Brisbane, but, you know, there was a lot of colours there, you know. And,
out of 10 colours at least.
Yeah, there was no Eskimos, but there was quite a few people up there. Whereas down here in Sawtelle, you know, we have a few Africans and a few Aussie Anglo-Australians and some Vietnamese.
And Nelson.
And Nelson, yeah. So, you know, we haven't got a lot.
Yeah.
But that's the extent of our, you know, multicultural society down here. So it was quite exciting to go to Brisbane. But not just that, but just that, I guess, there's lots of shops, there's lots of pubs. Everything is open. Mm. Everything is happening and it's exciting, you know. And I felt, wow, I'm in this exciting, vibrant, multicultural town. And then I had to kind of go, ha, no, hold on. This is Brisbane. This is just a big country town, you know. It's there's not a lot here really, but I could see that it hadn't actually changed all that much from when I'd lived there 6 years ago. It has changed, you know. It's a bit more exciting, but not that much. But having lived here for so long, you know, it seems really interesting and exciting, you know. And it was nice. And I recommend that anyone from Sawtelle who's listening should fuck off and go to the big city and experience, you know, the thrills of being able to order a pizza after 7 o'clock at night. It's mind blowing.
And
the lard.
Well, not just the lard, but also go
the things they do.
Go to the pub in Auburn, which is another Western Sydney suburb. Actually, just go to Western Sydney. The Sydney CBD is completely died. It's a complete waste of time now. Go out to Western Sydney. Go to Auburn, Blacktown, all these places. Go for a few drinks in the pub. Go to a kebab shop on the main street of Auburn, and you will just die from the pleasure of the kebabs they make in Auburn.
Matthew, I'm going to make a deal with you. I'll agree to do that. I'm going to go to the western suburbs and experience. I don't know Brisbane from a bar of soap. You know, Sydney from a bar. Western suburbs. I mean, I guess you get a compass and you go west. You know,
you hop on a train. Yeah.
Train. Oh, it's fairly modern down there.
Yeah,
don't need horses or anything.
No.
So okay, well, I'll go down there and do that, but in return, you have to go to Brisbane and experience the wild excitement of Redneckville.
Well,
I suggest going to Garden City. There's a shopping centre north of Garden City, and I can't remember what it's called now, but I'll ask my mates in Brisbane, they'll tell me. And it's full of Vietnamese, Singaporean, all these Asian people basically taking over the car park. And they're running restaurants, like a sort of car boot sale of restaurants. And they've got these fabulous, like, it's like being in Bangkok. You wander around this car park in a shopping centre shopping centre that's closed in the evenings.
Mm.
Because shopping centres close in the evenings, yes. Because no one wants to go shopping.
Not
in
normal
the
people, no.
No, not normal. But everyone else.
Yes.
The thousands of other people want to go to this place, to this unofficial sort of car boot sale where they have this fabulous array of shops selling, you know, flattened ducks and you know, stir-fried dog, or, you know, various exciting meals. And you just go there and stuff your face. It's great. Mm. It was the first place I ever tried that ice cream that tastes like garlic that's been dragged through a sewage pipe. You know the stuff. Durian.
Yeah, durian.
Durian ice cream. Delightful stuff. It's almost as good as lard. It was really sad to hear that Amy Winehouse died.
Yeah, it's rather unfortunate, but for a number of reasons.
My dad liked her when he came over from England. I'd heard about her and I thought, she's some old drunken tart, sings quite well. And my dad came over from England and he was raving about her because my dad tends to fancy drunken tarts. My dad's not listening, but what the hell. My mum's not a drunken tart, by the way.
she was the exception to the rule?
Well, when I knew her. I talk myself into some corners sometimes, don't I? Thanks, Matthew. Yeah, my dad came over and he rather liked her. And so I kind of ignored her after that because I thought, well, if my dad likes her, she's just some old drunken tart. And then a few months ago, I started listening to her a little bit and I thought, oh, she's quite good, you know. And when I'm coding and doing nerdy stuff, I generally tune in for a little bit and then tune out, to which I think is what most people do when they're working. And I suddenly found that I was listening to heaps of Amy Winehouse and quite enjoying it. You know, I'd surface from whatever I was thinking about and hear blethering on, and it was really nice, you know. And I thought, she's good. And just when I realised that I was quite liking her, some you know, Twitter stream came up, or Dent or something, saying when she died or something. And I thought, oh, when did she die? And I realised she'd only died like an hour ago, or they'd only discovered she died an hour ago. And I was, oh my God. And it was a bit... The immediacy of the internet's always a bit shocking.
Yeah, I think it was Andy C saying Amy Winehouse has joined the 27 Club.
The
group of rock stars who died at the age of 27.
Yeah, there was a big deal, man. Choking on your vomit by Jimi Hendrix style, yeah. And all that stuff.
I'm not attuned to popular culture terribly much anymore. I rely on Alison to do that for me, as with so many things. I was in the car.
I buy her some wet wipes for her birthday.
The
lard's the worst thing. I'm trying to get that off you.
Yeah.
Alison, can you get that bit? Yeah, sorry.
My introduction to Sortie Wood was in a short film that our friend Dave and our friend Mark co-produced/directed, where the punchline basically was Amy Winehouse dying. And I thought, oh, that's going to be unfortunately tasteless now. But I didn't know Amy Winehouse from a bar of soap. And I was in the car with Alison one day and I thought, why is Alison listening to Shirley Bassey?
Yeah,
and
that's a compliment, actually. I think that's all right.
And no, that's Amy Winehouse. And I thought, wow, that's what all that fuss is about. I kept talking about Andy C on Identica, but he was saying, you know, how old
that's
is...
That's because we love Andy C.
Oh, he's a...
He's a handsome chap.
He is.
For a person caked in...
A drug-crazed zombie caked in flour. Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's pretty
damn
handsome.
Good
I'd like to touch him. I'm going to bring some lard over to England when I go there in the hopes that I might bump into him.
I think that could be a marriage made in heaven. Lard and flour.
We could do a podcast about my experience.
Yep. Yeah, and Andy C was saying, you know, I wonder how old Pete Doherty is from the Libertines. And it turns out he's actually 32. But
he's ancient, isn't he?
Yeah.
I can't believe I ever even followed him. He's so old.
Pete has, I think, he's spent too much time in Filthy McNasties with Shane McGowan. He's acquired the luck of the North London Irish and is now indestructible.
I thought the luck of the North London Irish was actually very bad luck. But
well, the people around Shane McGowan tend to die a lot, but he never does.
Because Shane McGowan is actually the separated brother of Parrot Yassafat. No, Yasser Arafat. Sorry, I'm still on the lard there. Parrot Fat. No, yeah. So yeah, Yasser Arafat and Shane McGowan are actually brothers.
Well, Shane has this immensely malleable face.
He is very ugly.
He's, well, differently handsome.
No, he's ugly. He's fucking ugly. I mean, he's got his teeth smashed out of his face and he's always looks like he's half pissed. But he's ugly to such an extreme that girls find it attractive. And I've been aiming for that all my life. But I'd like to think I've achieved it, but I need to lose a few teeth, I think, and a more forgiving wife.
I just wish I'd realised the power of ugliness earlier on in my life. I could have been playing that card much heavier.
Man, I'm ugly, but you should see me in a sack.
Well, Man, I'm ugly, but I'm psychologically disturbed as well.
Slap some lard on me and look at me go.
Yes.
It's not going the way I thought it was going to go.
Where did you think you were going to go, just out of curiosity?
I have no idea where I was going.
As you can see, I've got out the glossy
on it.
The glossy lift out section from the Australian Financial Review, which slips around really nicely on the lard.
You can't wipe your arse in it, though.
Oh God, no! But I just, this is another quote I love, and I'm going to quote selectively with dot dot dots. I'm going to be really cruel and sadistic.
Good.
So this is from the lifestyle lift out. Persistent economic uncertainty, natural disasters, and political and social unrest are shifting the tectonic plates of the almost $1 trillion global tourism industry.
How much?
$1 trillion. But there can only be one winner in the short term, the cashed-up consumer. And I thought, the Sex Pistols were right. Cheap holidays in other people's misery.
And I'm sick of your bloody, you know, oh, we can't do that, it's copyright. Fucking, this is the, you know, punk. You should be able to play any punk music.
Any.
Because it's thieving the fucking thing is a statement in itself. And don't play 30 seconds, play the whole song.
That's something interesting in itself. I was listening to an interview with Billy Bragg, and that's probably the only interesting thing about an interview with Billy Bragg any time in the last 25 years.
Are you not Billy Bragg?
I love Billy Bragg.
He's a fine bloke.
Yeah, Billy was on Democracy Now! About a week ago. So I was listening to it yesterday. And he was saying that Between the Wars, his song about the miners' strike, he recorded it, then it had to go through the industrial process of being pressed into flat sheets of plastic that could be shipped out to people, and by the time anyone could buy it, the miners' strike was over. And he's just done a record now about, he's just made a recording, not done a record.
He's waiting for it to be printed.
he wrote a song about Murdoch, and the song's called Don't Buy the Sun, I think, or something similarly subtle. And, you know, it's a matter of going, recording it, uploading it, and people can get it. I thought
Billy Bragg's done
this. Yeah.
He's done it before, though. He did that with the George Bush song.
Well, yeah. But I suppose the thing is, he was making the point, which actually Bill Wyman and, if not Keith Richards and Mick Jagger have made, is that there was a brief period from, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, where you made money out of record sales. You don't anymore. Mm. You never did before that. You don't after that. It's just a
78 RPM doesn't have the same ka-ching value as it used to have.
It was just a blip on the radar. And if you're a musician, you shouldn't fret about that. You should instead celebrate the fact that you can write and release a topical song while it's still topical. I thought that was a rather good hark back to some of the things we were talking about in the last episode.
Like I remember. Yeah. In the last episode being the last one we had around this particular table, or the one that we had in the shed?
The one that we had in Shed Studio.
That's a long time ago. I forget.
How can you forget? You probably listened to it 3,000 times while editing it.
No, I wasn't listening to it. There was a gap there. Delete. Another gap. Delete.
That looks like one of Matthew's ums. I'll delete that.
Yes. I'm not going to say anything about that. I just hit delete randomly. Just close your eyes. Yeah, there you go. Look, that's edited days.
You will be deleted.
We actually drove down to the snow once with the kids in the back of the van. My very first ever car in Australia was a Mitsubishi Star Wagon, which is this...
Oh, I love the Mitsubishi Star Wagon.
It was a great car. You could put your fist through holes in the roof because it rusted through in the roof because I used to carry boats and canoes and stuff on the roof. And we drove down to the snow, and I remember being somewhere outside Canberra, and the kids were saying, "It's snowing!" I was going, "Is it? Yes, yes, snowflakes are landing in our hair." And I looked back, and sure enough, the kids were covered in snow because it was coming through the holes in the roof. But they were happy.
That wasn't the one you painted black.
I painted it white with house paint. It had mold all over it and rust and stuff. And I got drunk one day and I...
Oh, no. Just a couple of years.
I told you, that's a new story about painting cars. Yeah, that was the one I painted, but I didn't paint it black. I painted it white. It was a big white van, and it was rusting. And I kept on painting like this anti-rust paint on the rust, and then it would start rusting again. So eventually the whole car was covered in... It was white with blobs of grey and blobs of brown rust all over it. And one day I got really, really quite drunk. Someone gave me a three litre bottle of wine, Wolf Blass, I remember. It was particularly good red. And I drank the whole bottle and then thought I could make use of another 3 litres of paint. And I realised that in my drunken state, I probably shouldn't get paint on my clothes. So I stripped down to my underpants and painted the entire van with white interior house paint, matte. Acrylic. And I remember, I don't actually remember painting the van much, but I do have these vague recollection of standing on the roof of the van in my underpants, holding a paintbrush, and my neighbour calling out, "Hey Ruben, what are you doing?" And I was going, "Ah, I'm painting the van!" And he just sort of looked at me and laughed at something. And the next thing I remember was being woken up with a piece of Lego in my ear, because apparently I had sprawled from the front steps in through the front door into my son's Lego, and I'd slept on the pile of Lego for a few hours, and the neighbor's kid had come round and said, "Why is your dad sleeping on the front steps?" "Because he's drunk." And I was covered in paint in my underpants with Lego, and they were apparently building some Lego base on my head. And I eventually woke up and you know, I don't know. Who knows what I did, but I woke up eventually and must have gone away for a while and then come back again feeling ashamed. And the van was beautifully painted, windows and all. I painted everything. It was...
Oh, because I was going to ask.
Well, I had to scrape it off the windows, yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And the number plate. It wasn't good. And the house, there was some paintings on that. In fact, you've probably noticed that man's head.
I had.
That bald man on the house. That's me. Drunken guy.
I assumed that was one of your sons.
So, that was my drunken. Yeah, it's all that now. At least I wasn't covered in lard at the time.
Trust British paints? Sure can.
I like real names.
I've noticed that you often have logins. There's another subject I was going to talk about, which I haven't talked about, which is about real names, I guess, in some ways, because I've noticed how you use your real name, and I like the honesty of that. And there was a, what do you call it, a bit of a...
There was a kerfuffle on a couple of days ago.
Was that Genia?
I don't know, but there's some fuss about Google Plus and insisting on real names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Google Plus.
I don't believe in insisting on real names, but I've always used my real name.
I always use a fake name when I log into, you know, the web and insult you.
The thing that as a neckbeard freetard, I find amusing in dealings with various groups who consider themselves radical. I don't consider myself radical, but various people who consider themselves radical or revolutionary or whatever. The thing that I find odd, and perhaps our mutual friend Cameron Gregg will back us up on that, is that these people are perfectly
prepared to don a bandana and throw stones at policemen and smash shop windows, are not prepared to use the GIMP instead of Photoshop, because it's just too inconvenient. Oh.
It's not as much fun. I mean,
it's not as glamorous. It's not as glamorous, is it? And well, the thing is, it's funny when you watch a speech by Eben Moglen. He really goes for it, and he sounds as incendiary and as radical and as revolutionary as anybody I've ever heard.
A Belarusian theater troupe that got arrested and heavily beaten on after the so-called elections in Minsk this winter exfiltrated itself to New York City in January, did some performances of Tom Stoppard and gave some interviews. I'm sorry, of Harold Pinter, and gave some interviews. One of the Belarusian actors who was part of that troupe said in an interview with the New York Times, the Belarusian KGB is the most honest organization on earth. After the Soviet Union fell apart, they saw no need to change anything they did, so they saw no need to change their name either. And I thought that was a really quite useful comment. We need to keep in mind that they are exactly the same people they always were, whether they're in Cairo or Moscow or Belarus or Los Angeles or Jakarta or anywhere else on earth. They're exactly the same people they always were. So are we exactly the same people we always were too. We set out a generation ago to make freedom, and we're still doing it. But we have to pick up the pace now. We have to get more urgent now. We have to aim our engineering more directly at politics now. Because we have friends in the street trying to create human freedom. And if we don't help them, they'll get hurt. We rise to challenges. This is one. We've got to do it. Thank you very much.
Matthew, you need to give me a link to an Eben Moglen speech that radicalizes me, because I've not listened to more than one of his speeches, I don't think. I listened to one of them and I thought, yeah, that's pretty interesting. And that was it. But I don't find links on Google Plus for some reason. Just send me a Google Plus, you know, dentard, whatever, retard. I don't know, whatever you call them on Google Plus, tard.
Wasn't it a wave a while ago?
Oh, don't be silly. That's a thing of the past, Matthew. Google Plus is a thing of the future.
Oh, silly me.
By the time you edit this post, Google Plus will be the thing of the future.
Oh, yes, yes.
We'll be flying in jet cars and Google Plusing our way to heaven and back.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be good if it's from Google.
You won't edit this for 10 years, will you? You'll be waiting for them to fail before you edit this whole podcast.
No. I'm utterly confident that Google Plus will be an Apache incubator project in 12 months.
I think even if Google Plus is an Apache incubator, whatever the hell that is, I don't know.
It's where Google Wave ended up.
Okay. Well, even if they decide to free-tard it, it's going to be influential, because just using it today in my deep and heady knowledge of the whole concept, there's some aspects of it which actually the user interface is the thing that gets you, and that's the thing that gets you on Twitter, on Facebook, those things.
The thing is, what's their incentive for doing it? Their incentive for doing it is
they've shat their pants.
Yeah, they're scared. And someone else is threatening their platform.
So why do we have free software?
Facebook has threatened them by saying, no, unless you're a member of Facebook, you don't get to see what's on Facebook. So
why is that more scary with Facebook than it was for Murdoch? Like, Facebook said did Murdoch. Yeah. But when you have, fuck you, Murdoch. Well, I guess it's because Murdoch's clueless fucking old fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Facebook was in the right place in the right time, and Google was in the right place in the right time in the late 90s.
For a different place, a different time.
And Google was doing exactly what Microsoft was doing before them, which is protect the platform. We have the platform. We have this vague business plan of we have the eyeballs. Somehow we're going to make money out of the eyeballs.
Yeah, well, I think our business plan is the best one. Which is to do a podcast which becomes so insanely popular that Google will buy us. And then you'll refuse and hold out for a better offer.
No, I'll take it. I'll take it.
Thank God. I have to, because I was going to say, and then I kill you.
No.
And I'll take the money.
No, I'll take it.
Right.
They'll recast it. They'll have...
You'll take it on the... Proviso,
no, they'll have what's his name? Who's James Bond?
I don't know. You mean the big nose one, the new one?
Yeah.
One big stonker like me, Ruben Hillier. No, that's me. The other guy. I don't know. Break your policy. Go on, fucking break your policy.
During the Short Sharp Film Festival. During the Short Sharp Awards, I shouldn't say a festival. It's one night.
It's a festival of shorts and sharps. It's disgusting. We're all rubbing ourselves with lard and giving shorts.
But no, my friend Spencer from ECC, he compared me to an actor whose name I also can't remember. So we're going to work out who these guys are.
You were compared to an actor.
Who are going to replace...
That's almost like being a successful actor, being compared to an actor.
Well, you've been compared to an actor.
And I can't even act.
What's his name? Daniel Craig. You're Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig.
Is that the man,
that's,
is it?
That's a James Bond
was
guy.
Was he James Bond? I thought it was another guy. There's a Wikipedia page about me.
Someone says you're Daniel Craig. I am. I don't see it myself.
Can't you tell by my big nose?
Paul Giamatti. I was compared to Paul Giamatti.
Oh my God, that's very sophisticated. Because he has no hair.
Because he's fat and bald and beardy. Oh, and
you're exactly
glasses.
Like him. Look, he's got glasses, he's bald, and he has a beard.
Yeah.
He's probably into free software as well.
It's almost certain.
What is he acting? That's the key. I want to hear that.
Oh, he's been in everything. He's
porn movies?
I don't think so. In the Hollywood remake of our podcast.
The film?
Yes.
That's right, the 3D adventure game.
Yeah.
With the naked ladies.
Yes, you'll be played by Daniel Craig and I'll be played by Paul Giamatti.
But we'll need to have a love interest. It'll involve lard.
I think our love interest has
it's
to
raining.
Be...
It's raining.
It is raining. Our love interests have to be either...
Oh, no. No. Not Jacqueline Pierce.
Either Jacqueline Pierce from Blake 7.
And the other one you're going to say is that dead Doctor Who lady.
No, the other one is maybe Linda Bellingham from the OXO Cube ads.
No. I think the woman from... that woman!
Oh!
You know that one. Yes. You know that one.
Barbara Flynn.
God, she was gorgeous.
She was also the...
We should send her a link to our podcast so we know how much we... Barbara Flynn, Matthew and I love you. We want to have your love children, even if you're 107.
She has no website. She was born
of course
in...
she doesn't. She's far too sophisticated for such silly trifles.
But yeah, Barbara Flynn was born in 1948.
She's still younger than my mum, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But yeah,
a young man like myself.
Yes.
She was in a lot of things on telly when I was a kid or a teenager, and
I
always liked her. I always thought she was pretty funny, and she was this intelligent looking woman, and I liked her.
I'm surprised she was in so few things. She was also in. As well as being in the Beiderbecke series, she was
You're
in...
You are such a nerd, Matthew.
She was also in A Very Peculiar Practice.
Which I never saw.
Which was Peter Davison's thing that he did after Doctor Who.
So he went from being a vet to he being went a from doctor being, to being a...
To being another doctor.
A doctor, was it? A practice. I presumed it was a doctor or a vet or something.
But that was a fantastic series by a guy called Andrew Davies. Alan Plater and Andrew Davies both subsequently did a whole lot of costume dramas for the BBC. Did a whole lot of adaptions of Brontes and things like that.
Yeah, don't look so distasteful. I mean, those things are okay. I mean, the BBC okay. has fantastic costume dramas. And so, whoa, listen to that.
That's good.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get wet tonight when I go home. I hope you fuckers appreciate this.
This is not looking good.
I'm going to be bloody soaked to my underpants because of this damn podcast. Or this alcohol or something. One of the two.
So we're agreed. Barbara Flynn is the love interest.
She's our mascot. She's the love interest for the movie.
We only get one love interest.
Because we're...
Whoa!
Oh, shit, that hit me.
Whoa!
The microphone's on fire.
Nurse, the screens, nurse.
I think in the movie, they'll be the one love interest. And you and I inevitably will
We'll
fight it out.
And
the whole thing will come to a... You know, when Sortelican Valley, you know, erupts as this world fiery enterprise, it'll be because, you know, we produce this fantastic thing, which was all centred around our love interest, which
will be Barbara Flynn. Yeah.
And so without Barbara Flynn, the Sortelican Valley would never happen.
Okay. That sounds bad.
Can I stay here tonight?
Yeah.
Hey, good old Lord there. I went out and got my best friend Larry. I said, Larry, listen, I've been talking with the Lord. Larry said, oh, really? I said, yeah, that's Lord Larry, Larry Lord. You walked off there laughing. I hear them all up there laughing at me. You know I'm the only guy in this neighborhood with an ark? People around there laughing, picket signs, walking up and down. I'm sick and tired of this stuff here. People are walking around there. How you doing, Tarzan? How's everything up there? Sick and tired of this mess here. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm letting all these animals out, and then I'm going to burn down this ark, and I'm going to Florida somewhere because you haven't done nothing. I'm sick and tired of all this mess. You're fooling around, and you haven't done nothing as you got it raining. It's not a shower, is it? Okay, Lord, me and you, right? Because I knew all the time everything was...
We have a crisis. I was chuckling to myself, thinking, Reuben is trapped here. He can't go home until the storm passes. But we have a more serious crisis on our hands. We're running out of booze.
Oh, fucking Jesus Christ.
Which means one or the other of us, or Alison, is going to get wet.
Alison, she can go. She's a lady.
Somebody said, as soon as an Englishman opens his mouth, he makes an enemy.
Yeah, oh yeah. Because, you know, we've got 52 cultures in England, and at least, 52 is just some number some, you know, brainy person thought up because they had nothing else to do. We have a lot of cultures in England, and here am I, having lived outside of England for 52 years, or whatever it was, 100 years. But we have a lot of culture in England, Australia. In fact, why the fuck am I even limiting this to England? Because Australia is part of England,
well,
really.
Yeah,
we try and pretend we're not, but we're speaking English, for Christ's sake.
Certainly, when I was a child, my parents and their generation considered themselves to be part of England.
Yeah. And you might not consider yourself to be part of England now, but does that mean you're not?
I certainly consider myself to be English culturally, and that probably distances me from people who are born 10 or 20 years after me.
But does that mean they're not English?
No,
kids, I have a 16-year-old and a 9-year-old. Are they not English? I mean, they're Australian. I know they're Australian, but they're just like the English are influenced by the French. I mean, when you have a roast pig for dinner in England, what do you eat? You eat roast pork. What's pork? It's a French word.
Beef.
What?
Beef, as opposed to cow. Bœuf.
That's not a pig, though.
French. Cow. Bœuf is French.